Welcome to Now. I'm David Byrd.
And I'm Manny Eck.
The conflict in Ukraine has wide-reaching implications, but how is it affecting Ukrainians who live in the United States?
Do we want the same domination that we've had for centuries with Russia, where they think that this is their empire? We've had enough of that.
The recent turmoil in Ferguson, Missouri, brought police use of military equipment into the spotlight.
But many of the police forces actually think that this is what the equipment would be good for, is riot suppression in a big city in an urban area. And you're specifically instructed that it's not for that.
Some young people are teaching senior citizens how to use their technology.
Apple launches its new devices and U2 releases its new album to iTunes users worldwide.
And the late James Gandolfini's last film, The Drop, opens in U.S. theaters.
All that and more coming up on this Monday edition of Now.
A ceasefire in Ukraine between government troops and pro-Russian separatists has brought a temporary lull in the crisis gripping that country.
But many of the estimated 1.2 million Americans of Ukrainian descent remains tense, fearful, and angry.
VOA's Adam Phillips talked with some of these folks in New York.
Most of these teenagers singing the Ukrainian national anthem at St. George's Academy in New York City were either born in Ukraine or their parents were. Their school principal, the Reverend Peter Shishka, is himself the son of Ukrainian immigrants. He encourages the students' patriotic pride, adding that it may be necessary for Ukraine to go to war rather than lose its independence, which it won in 1991 after the breakup of the Soviet Union.
What is the alternative? Do we want the same domination that we've had for centuries with Russia, where they think that this is their empire? We've had enough of that. It's also a matter of prayer, of meditating. Where do we stand? What is our reaction to all of this? Are we compassionate people? Are we supportive of those that are suffering or undergoing persecution? We just can't be screaming with placards. Anger isn't going to do it. Hate isn't going to do it.
Shishka's students also have seemingly contradictory viewpoints. Some, like Ksenia Vitovich, have family friends who recently returned to Ukraine from New York to fight the pro-Russian separatists.
Honestly, like, the people that go there to fight are just literally volunteering to give up their life for the sake of their country. I mean, they're fighting for their independence and their homeland, and they're fighting against people who know how to fight.
Others are organizing bake sales or working for Ukrainian diaspora organizations to raise money to purchase emergency first aid kits for the army. Alexandra Azer, whose father is Egyptian and whose mother is Polish, is trying to offer her Ukrainian-American classmates emotional support.
You hear how sad they are. Like, we just try to tell them, like, everything's going to be okay. Like, we try to listen and make sure, like, we are updated also with the news and not, like, we're clueless to what's going on.
Alexandra Rokowski was a small child when she came to this country just after World War II. A fluent Ukrainian speaker, she remains deeply attached to her homeland.
So when something is happening on a scale that's happening in Ukraine now, we tend to be very worried and tend to write letters to our congressmen and senators and try to help financially through different channels.
The Ukrainian Congress Committee of America represents the million or so Americans of Ukrainian descent. It's organizing demonstrations and lobbying the U.S. government to act more forcefully. Spokesman Andrei Dobryansky says the U.S. and its European allies should start by designating Ukraine a major non-NATO ally.
And that would immediately cut down on the red tape of transfers of military supplies back and forth. Other things is sending those supplies, anti-tank munitions, anti-aircraft munitions, any kind of equipment that can help Ukraine secure its border.
Dobryansky's group believes Vladimir Putin's Russia is waging a war to erase his country. Still, he remains optimistic. A quarter century ago, many doubted Ukraine would ever become independent. We were supposed to have been wiped off the map for good hundreds of years ago, he says. Yet here we are. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
For more on this story, log on to our website, www.voanews.com.
And let us know what you think by visiting our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at NowVOAShow. U.S. lawmakers here in Washington are reviewing federal government programs that provide billions of dollars in surplus military equipment to civilian police departments.
The action comes amid growing calls for an end to the so-called militarization of local police forces.
The investigation follows the police response to quell days of unrest in Ferguson, Missouri, after the fatal shooting last month of an unarmed black teenager by a white police officer.
VOA's Chris Simpkins has more on the story.
Police in Ferguson, Missouri, dressed in military uniforms with assault weapons and armored combat vehicles, fire tear gas to break up demonstrations following the shooting death of Michael Brown. The police response to the unrest drew criticism over the militarization of civilian police departments and the use of combat equipment to suppress protests. During a Senate Homeland Security Committee hearing, Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill said the use of combat equipment in Ferguson was unnecessary.
Officers dressed in military fatigues will not be viewed as partners in any community. Armored military vehicles, even if they are painted black and used with the utmost discretion, are by definition intimidating.
McCaskill and other lawmakers are looking into several federal government programs that give surplus military weapons and equipment to local police forces. Since 1997, the Defense Department has given away $5 billion worth of equipment meant to be used to fight crime and terrorism and respond to disasters. Kentucky Senator Rand Paul opposes this.
But many of the police forces actually think that this is what the equipment would be good for, is riot suppression in a big city in an urban area. And you're specifically instructed that it's not for that. By supplying all of this free equipment, much of which is just frankly inappropriate and really shouldn't be on anybody's list of authorized equipment.
Defense Department officials say the military equipment and supplies are useful to law enforcement agencies. But Alan Estevez, the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisitions, said the Pentagon cannot monitor how the equipment is used.
I think we need to review all the equipment that we're providing, Senator. And as I said, we, the Department of Defense, do not push any of this equipment on any police force. The states decide what they need.
St. Louis newspaper photojournalist Wiley Price covered the Ferguson unrest. He says people were surprised to see police driving around in military vehicles pointing assault weapons at them.
Other photographers were questioning each other about what was going on. And this went on for 3 or 4 days. And again, the police aggravated peaceful marchers when they were just standing there chanting.
Western Kentucky University criminal justice professor Jim Bierman told lawmakers he supports giving police military equipment, but with more training on when it's appropriate to use.
If there is any silver lining that comes out of the events in Ferguson, it is that we begin this discussion that should have happened probably in 1997, not in 2014, about how we use this equipment, whether it comes from a federal program or out of a city's general fund, in an appropriate way that doesn't damage the relationship the police have with the community.
Lawmakers say they will continue to review government programs that provide military equipment to domestic police departments. Meanwhile, the Obama administration is conducting its own investigation into the programs, hoping to avoid the kind of police response in Ferguson that sparked so much outrage and controversy. Chris Simpkins, VOA News, Washington.
So, what do you think? Should military equipment be used by police?
Let us know your thoughts by visiting our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And follow us on Twitter at NowVOAShow. Manny, would you consider yourself tech savvy?
I'm pretty tech savvy for my generation, but I'm not as tech savvy as my 18-year-old sister.
Okay, I just got a new phone. I'm still learning how to use it.
Is it the iPhone 6?
Well, no, it's a Samsung Note.
Oh.
It's the competition.
It's big.
Yes. Well, I have big fingers.
You can hurt somebody with that one.
No, yeah.
It's like a mini iPad, right?
Well, they call it a phablet. It's in between a phone and a tablet. So, you know, I have a friend whose 3-year-old daughter knows how to navigate her iPad. She's 3. And she's like, you know, not only is she playing games like the little games that kids do, but, you know, it seems to come more naturally to her. But for some senior citizens, not me, but no. For some, learning to use technology can present a real challenge.
And as Faiza Almasri and Faith Lapidus found out, there is a program that is using teens to help seniors learn how to survive in the digital world.
My files.
When Myra Stafford signed up for this workshop, she had one goal in mind. The 73-year-old wanted to learn how to use her iPad.
My daughter gave it to me, and she's been long waiting for me to use it.
Her daughter won't have to wait too long because Stafford is learning fast.
I am more confident today than I was before. Today I have more hands-on. Working with young people makes it wonderful because that's all they know. And they didn't make me feel that I was old or dumb.
11-year-old Zion Perkins is Stafford's teacher.
You have to be really, really patient, you know, because some of them might not know as well as others, so you have to be really patient.
This workshop is just one of the programs the 50-plus center offers to older residents of Columbia, Maryland.
It's everything from Qigong and Tai Chi to yoga to Latin jam dance. We have a lot of exercise programs, and then we also have a lot of programs where people just meet together to play cards or just to, you know, spend some time together, sewing circles, things like that.
Center Director Merity McCaig added the senior tech workshop last year after receiving a donation of several iPads from a local community organization. About 100 seniors have signed up for the classes since then.
As people are aging, their worlds get a little smaller. Some of them can no longer drive. Some of them don't get out to make long trips to see their relatives. And it brings them back out into Facebook and to Skype. And just to be able to communicate, they can do everything from ordering things from Amazon now to ordering groceries or meals.
Teaching seniors about technology also benefits the economy, says career and retirement expert Carrie Hannon.
You have a huge growing population over 60 that's just expanding and offers an incredible opportunity to buy online, to research products that they want to buy, maybe not online, but they research them online. So about a third of internet users in general are over 50. As seniors get more excited about using the technology, they're going into the marketplace and buying it. So that's a boom for the economy right there.
As people live longer, retirees may consider getting back into the workforce. And the internet, Hannon says, is a valuable resource that helps them do that.
It is absolutely critical if you're looking for a job in today's market and you're over the age of 50, you absolutely have to be up to speed to technology. There are no excuses. A paper resume is no longer the big thing today. You need to have an online resume. You need to have your LinkedIn presence. And that's how you're going to network. That's how you're going to find jobs today.
That's Carlton Reed Calloway's goal.
When I was retiring in 1995, the computer world was coming in, and I was going out. So I didn't think that it was necessary for me to learn how to use a computer. You know, I was ready just to leave, to get out of it.
Now, as he starts his second career as an actor, it's a necessity.
You have to go online for job interviews. You have to go online to fill out applications. And everything is done online now. And if you don't know how to go online to do these things, I mean, so I had to get in touch with the new world. As a matter of fact, I had done a photo op last week, and I wanted to send some pictures, you know, photos, headshots, body shots, stuff like that, to my agent, and I didn't know how to do it.
17-year-old workshop instructor Madison Lamb showed him how. She's getting something from the class, too.
I think I've learned a lot and how to connect with people and work with, because I'm usually a shy person, so I'm not really good at connecting with others besides my family and friends. So I've learned to be more outgoing.
The benefits for the young teachers go beyond building social skills, says Sapphire Windley with the Youth and Teen Center, which runs the program.
I find in this day and age, our young people, they're trying to explore and find out how do they add value to life, just trying to find their way. So this is something where they're needed and their skill set is valued and it gives them purpose.
And there's a sense of accomplishment in bringing someone into the digital age. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
So what's your opinion? Let us know by sending an email to voaasia@voanews.com.
Or you can post your thoughts to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at NowVOAShow. Apple launched its new iPhones last week, as well as the first device invented under new CEO Tim Cook, the Apple Watch.
Some say the introduction of faster, larger display iPhones will make the company more competitive, with a slew of larger smartphones that have flooded the market.
As VOA's Millar Sega tells us, some say the Apple Watch could signal a new chapter in the company's history.
Apple's electronic ecosystem just got larger with the official launch of two new phones, the iPhone 6 with a 4.7-inch display and the larger iPhone 6 Plus at 5.5 inches. Together with faster processors and longer battery life, tech blogger Dan Ackerman says the updated phones may finally reverse the exodus of consumers who have switched from Apple.
I think there's a lot of people who got big screen envy and switched away from Apple towards Android phones with those 5-inch screens, which are really amazing for reading books and looking at your calendar and web reading. If Apple can get into that category, I think there's a lot of people waiting to switch back.
At this Apple store in New York, there's no shortage of consumers willing to wait in line for hours to buy the company's newest product.
I need the new phone.
The new phone.
The new phone, yes. Definitely.
It's ready for an upgrade.
Yeah, same. Same. Even though I only had mine for a year, but I want the new one.
Well, I like everything Apple does.
But perhaps not for everyone is Apple's new mobile payment system. With the iPhone 6 NFC, or near-field communication chip, iPhone users will be able to make secure payments at hundreds of stores by simply waving their phones. But recent surveys suggest the majority of Americans are still wary of using cell phones to make purchases. We spoke with creditcards.com analyst Matt Schultz on Skype.
There are going to be concerns about security, and I do think that people will be a little bit leery of using these mobile payments, just because with anything new, people tend to tread lightly.
But some say if any company can turn mobile phones into wallets, Apple and its large user base is best positioned to do it. Global marketing guru Eric Wachimstaller says for Apple, the rewards are huge.
Number one, there's a convenience, of course, from a consumer perspective. But most importantly, it's changing the revenue model for Apple. Apple has a chance now to actually make money transaction by transaction on a payment transaction. And that's a huge potential for Apple.
The other potential moneymaker was the official launch of the Apple Watch, the company's first foray into the electronic wearable marketplace. Industry experts say the smartwatch and its seamless integration with the iPhone could be a game changer for Apple. But Matt Schultz says whether the new products can establish Tim Cook as the rightful heir to Apple founder Steve Jobs remains to be seen.
His performance only matters so much. What's going to really matter is how these new products do.
With a starting price of $349, Apple's smartwatch goes on sale early next year. Millar Sega, VOA News, Washington.
So, do you plan to get a new Apple phone?
What about the Apple Watch?
Let us know your opinion by visiting our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And follow us on Twitter, at Now VOA Show.
Because all we got is right now.
Also last week, the legendary rock band U2 released its new album, Songs of Innocence, free to nearly 500 million people worldwide.
The band performed in Cupertino, California, in conjunction with Apple's release of its new iPhone models and its new Apple Watch.
Band leader Bono joked with Apple CEO Tim Cook about the company's ability to release the album to that many fans at once.
So, U2, let me just get this straight. U2's new album, Songs of Innocence, is going out for free to 500 million people in the next 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Wow, that's instant gratification. That really happened? Did that really happen?
We're not kidding. That just happened.
The album features 11 tracks and was sent free to iTunes users, but it wasn't entirely free. Apple paid the band $100 million for the rights to publish their songs on iTunes.
Cook told a cheering crowd that the album was sent automatically to iTunes users and would be available until October.
Every iTunes customer in 119 countries It's available throughout the day in your iTunes music library. All you have to do is click, and you can begin listening to this incredible music.
There had been speculation whether U2 would release an album this year or not. The band's last album was 2009's No Line on the Horizon.
According to the band's website, Songs of Innocence explores themes of home and family, relationships, and discovery.
The album was recorded in Dublin, London, New York, and Los Angeles, and is produced by Danger Mouse, along with Paul Epworth, Ryan Tedder, Declan Gaffney, and Flood.
Songs of Innocence will be released worldwide October 14th.
This is not the first time a major artist has released an album on iTunes. Beyoncé released her self-titled album on the service last December, and it is one of the best-selling albums of 2014.
Some other artists, including Kid Cudi and Wolfmother, also released surprise albums this year.
So are you a U2 fan? Did you get Songs of Innocence last week?
You can let us know your thoughts by visiting our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Now VOA Show. Explode!
The late James Gandolfini's last movie, The Drop, has opened in U.S. theaters.
The current drama follows bartender Bob Sikinowski, played by Tom Hardy, as he becomes engulfed in a mafia scheme involving bars holding cash for gangsters.
You never know up front when your bar becomes a drop bar. You just take all the city's dirtiest money, and bagmen come and go from all over town, and nobody ever sees it coming. Nobody ever sees it going. And then they could tell you to be the drop bar next week.
Gandolfini plays Marv, the owner of a drop bar. Marv used to own the bar, but then Chechen mobsters forced him away from his perch.
At least I had something once. I was respected. I was feared. When I walked into a place people sat up, they sat up straight. They noticed. What'd you ever have? That bar stool that you put that old biddy at and bought her free drinks. And don't think I don't know that you did it on purpose. That was my stool, and nobody sat on that stool because it was Cousin Marv's stool. And that meant something. That meant something.
But it didn't, ever. It was just a stool.
Marv's bitterness over losing the bar leads him to engineer a robbery of his own place, but the robbers bungle the job, and that draws the attention of the Chechen mob and the police.
Gandolfini died of a heart attack at age 51. The Drop premiered at this month's Toronto Film Festival, where his wife and son attended the screening.
Michael Gandolfini told the Associated Press that he wants the world to know his father was more than just an actor.
I wanted the world and everyone just to know that he was more than an actor. I wanted to show and represent my dad more than just an actor, but as a person, I want to make sure everyone knows who he really was. Yeah.
Tom Hardy said in Toronto that working with James Gandolfini was a rare privilege.
And he's an incredibly, wickedly funny man. And acting, he's a brilliant actor, and he's a brilliant artist, and he's a very sensitive man. I could go on and on and on about Jimmy, you know what I mean? That would be probably not my place to do that because of his friends and family, but for me, you know, I admired him, I admired his work, and I was fortunate enough to work with him.
The Drop is based on a screenplay by Dennis Lehane, who also wrote Mystic River and Gone, Baby, Gone.
The Drop is the first English-language film from Belgian director Michael Roskam.
Roskam told the AP that screening the movie with Gandolfini's family was a poignant moment.
So today I'm going to let this movie go, and it's going to be also a goodbye to Jim. I hadn't had the chance to do that yet, so it's going to be emotional. And then, of course, especially for Marcy and Michael Gandolfini, they're here with us today, and that means a lot to me because you need to be brave to do this and come and sit here and share that moment with an audience.
Sean Ertz, whose last film with Roskam, Bullhead, was nominated for an Academy Award, says he was happy to work with the director again.
The Drop is distributed in the United States by Fox Searchlight Pictures. It is rated R for language and violence.
So, are you a James Gandolfini fan? Do you plan to see The Drop?
Let us know by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter. We're at Now VOA Show. Thanks for joining us for this Monday edition of Now.
If you want to see video of the stories on our show, log on to our website, www.voanews.com.
That's also where you can download copies of our show, and we're on iTunes.
Let us know your thoughts by visiting our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
Be sure to follow us on Twitter at NowVOAShow.
Patrice Martin produces our program.
The managing editor of VOA English is Diane Gao.
And I'm Manny Eck.
I'm David Byrd. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of Now.